This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
A search for the truth behind an international drug smuggling plot.
How are we going to unravel this all?
From the BBC World Service, this is World of Secrets, Season 5, Finding Mr. Fox. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This is the Climate Question podcast from the BBC World Service, and I'm Jordan Dunbar. Welcome to our latest guide looking at the basics of our changing climate. I'm joined by experts and friends of our show to answer commonly searched questions. What is climate change? Ask most people what exactly COP is, they'll probably struggle to explain it. What do we mean when we talk about 1.5 degrees in climate change? I often feel like the news about climate change is bad.
Emergency services in the United States have rescued thousands of people from flooded parts of Florida.
We're going to head to Greece now. Wildfires are raging.
And now to America, where these people's homes were hit by some of the strongest and fastest developing hurricanes.
The Amazon has had its worst forest fires in two decades.
Extreme weather events becoming more common. Rising temperatures, rising greenhouse gases, broken promises of fighting climate change. These are all realities of a warming world. But when we spoke to climate experts, they thought the media wasn't doing a good enough job of showing what success we have had. So I want to know, what progress have we made in the fight against climate change? With me to help is Katharina Brandmeier.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Katharina, you're a director of policy at the Grantham Institute, which is a global think tank, and it's at the very forefront of climate change, both the science of its effects and, importantly for us, the solutions.
Yeah.
So let's get into some of the wins.
We end this COP celebrating a new chapter of hope for the world.
It's 2015 at the big International Climate Summit in Paris, or COP as it's known. It's here that the historic agreement is signed that saw nearly every country on Earth agree for the first time to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to avoid the worst effects of climate change.
I have been saying for a long time, we must, we can, and I used to say we will. Today we can say we did, and I thank you all.
That agreement has put us on the path we are on now in terms of fighting global warming. So Katharina, tell me, where are we?
So if you look at, for example, what the United Nations Environment Programme estimated was the projection that we were on track for back in 2015, we're putting the world on track for 4 degrees warming.
Which would have been disastrous.
Exactly, absolutely disastrous.
The biggest gusts that were over 100, you can almost hear it coming, like it was a train coming.
No city can take that amount of rain.
We are entering the fifth consecutive failed rainy season in the Horn of Africa.
Everybody was just shocked. There were flames like 20 or 30 feet high behind the houses.
But if you look at where we are today, as a result of policies, for example, to drive the uptake of clean technologies such as renewables or electric vehicles, and the fact that we're also seeing really remarkable examples of the transition away from fossil fuels, for example, with the closure of the last coal-fired power plant in the UK just early this year.
Ratcliffe on Soar in Nottinghamshire has been generating power for the last 56 years. When operations end, the UK will become the first major economy to fully phase out coal.
We are currently on track for a warming of 3.1 degrees Celsius by the end of the century.
Okay, so we were on 4 and we've bent the curve, as they say. It's going down to 3.1. Lots of people listen and think, that's not great.
So it might seem like a small temperature difference, but it really does make a significant difference in terms of the scale of impacts that we're expecting. Obviously, if all countries' national plans were to be delivered, we would be on track for 2.6, which again takes us one step closer to that 1.5 degrees temperature goal.
Yeah, carbon emissions are unfortunately a massive problem, and they're rising. It is a slower rise than before, but we have to do much, much, much more to get them down. Katharina, what bits of progress can we learn from to help us go further? give us some good news.
We've really seen a significant growth in renewable electricity over the past decade or so, and that is really something to be celebrated. We've seen, for example, particularly in the case of solar, a remarkable uptake with global solar capacity now being 40 times larger than it was back in 2010.
Let's just take that in for a second. We make 40 times more energy from the sun than back in 2010. I mean, that's an amazing amount of growth, and it's getting faster.
And just to put this into context, this means that solar will actually overtake other forms of electricity generation, such as nuclear or hydro, by the end of this decade. And it will also overtake gas and coal power by the early 2030s, becoming the world's largest source of electricity.
Our World in Data has a great graph on this. Okay, get ready for this fall. In 1975, it cost $130 per watt for solar electricity.
What some scientists are trying to do is to find ways of using solar energy to make electricity.
In the year 2000, it was $6.41 per watt. And last year, it was 31 cents per watt. That is less than a dollar. That's why some people are calling this the solar century. Tell me more about where the solar growth is happening.
So we're seeing significant amount of solar actually being rolled out in China. China has really been leading the way on renewable technology. We're also seeing significant amounts in the EU, in the US. And what we need to really address with the rest of this decade and the following decades is really also making sure that we can scale up climate finance for developing countries.
And that's going to be helped by a fall in price. And the more solar panels you make, the cheaper they get, right?
Exactly. And the cheaper it gets, the more you're going to deploy it. So there's a positive cycle that is created as a result of this.
And what about wind? That's the other one that we often hear about.
Wind has also had a significant growth. If you look at capacity 10 years ago compared to now, we've seen a tripling in that capacity. And wind is expected to double again in capacity by the end of this decade.
This waterside wasteland in Brooklyn is about to be transformed into one of the largest hubs for offshore wind in the US.
The Japanese-Australian-Taiwanese project is called Formosa 2. Its 47 turbines are expected to power nearly 400,000 homes.
So the numbers for wind are, again, really big. So just to start, a terawatt is a trillion watts, so that is a lot of power. Go back to the year 2010, and globally we produced 345 terawatts from wind. Last year, it was 2,300 terawatts, nearly seven times more.
And with its stunning long coastlines, Japan is erecting new turbines at pace.
And that big surge of renewables globally has even led to seven countries being nearly totally powered by green electricity last year. Bhutan, Ethiopia, Iceland, Nepal, Albania, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Paraguay all get very close to 100% of their power from solar, wind, and hydro.
In the middle of rural northern Ethiopia stands the newly opened Ashegoda wind farm, sub-Saharan Africa's largest.
All that clean energy is also starting to replace oil when it comes to transport. We hit a global record for electric vehicles sold this year. China is the world's biggest vehicle market. And 54% of all new vehicles sold there are either electric or plug-in hybrid vehicles. The price of those vehicles is coming down, meaning we should see more EVs replacing fossil fuel-driven cars, trucks, and buses across the world.
Until recently, the idea that electric vehicles would make up a significant portion of all cars on our streets was something for the future. Then China came along and thrust the future upon us now.
Back to you, Katerina. You've got a second area of progress that you'd like to talk to us about. And this one is one I hadn't actually considered before. What is it?
So I thought it would be interesting to take a look at what's happening at local level, and particularly to shine a light on what cities are doing. Cities are key players in efforts to tackle climate change. On the one hand, they are major contributors to climate change, because they make significant use of energy. They are
70%, I think the UN puts the emissions of cities down to.
Exactly. They are also obviously transportation hubs. They also are big consumers of all sorts of goods and services. And as a result of that, as you said, they are major contributors to greenhouse gases.
So a big problem.
Significant problem.
There is no question that cities are where the most crucial change is needed when it comes to fighting climate change. Just over half.
But there are many powers that reside with local leaders, and they can really make the most of those powers in the fight against climate change.
Why have you chosen this as an area of progress? Give me some examples where this is happening.
So a couple of examples that it's worth celebrating, I think, is efforts by Bogota, for example, to switch their public transport system to clean alternatives such as electric buses.
And it's not just climate that's helping.
No, in fact, what is motivating city leaders is the fact that they realize that climate measures can also help deliver for other major challenges that cities are facing, such as, for example, air pollution. Poor air quality, we know that it contributes to a range of health risks, such as respiratory infections, heart disease, stroke, and lung cancer. And the World Health Organization estimates that it is associated with 7 million premature deaths a year.
Wow. So not only are we fighting climate change through cutting carbon emissions from transport, but we're also preventing those deaths?
Exactly. Other examples are Bangkok, which is expanding its mass transit network and where we're also seeing a growing number of electric tuk-tuks on the streets.
Move Me, the ride that I'm in right now, has been operational since 2018 and is the first and only electric tuk-tuk ride-hailing service in Bangkok.
We have served like 3 million passenger trips already, and we have saved like 800 tons of CO2 emission. Comparing that equally to 6 acres of forest.
And also cities like Paris, which have made significant efforts, again, to promote walking and cycling and disincentivize the use of petrol and diesel vehicles in the city. Some of these measures, they really deliver for a number of different priorities, as you were highlighting. It will be health priorities. In some cases, obviously, there are also economic benefits that come from increased productivity, jobs that are created locally.
There's co-benefits, as they call them.
Exactly.
There's an organization known as C40 Cities. It's a coalition of mayors who've signed up to reduce their carbon emissions. And they include, it's a very long list, Buenos Aires, Copenhagen, Lagos, Lisbon, London, Los Angeles, Melbourne, Montreal, Paris, San Francisco, Seoul, Sydney, Tokyo, Schwerin, or Pretoria, and Vancouver, which is a lot of people, a lot of cities, and a lot of progress. Katarina, we've heard lots of areas of progress in the fight against climate change. What needs to happen next so that when we have you next on, we have 3 hours worth of progress?
Yeah, we should realize that we have all the tools at hand to really take action. We have many of the technologies. Climate also is something that the public is concerned about, and therefore they do want to see leaders taking action on. And climate action is also the way to deliver improved health, a stronger economy, a more resilient economy. It might not always be linear, but the direction of travel is clear.
Perfect. Katarina, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Pleasure.
All these examples show we really can make progress in the fight against climate change. But they're also frustrating because we need to move faster and further. This electric bus called Climate Progress is heading in the right direction, but we need to get more people on board and hit that accelerator. I'm Jordan Dunbar. Thank you for listening to this guide to climate basics. And you can find our other guides to climate change wherever you get your podcasts or by searching for The Climate Question on YouTube.
When we left, there was this wonderful feeling, but it was only the beginning of a nightmare.
This is a story that started with a job advert. A yacht owner looking for a crew to sail his recently renovated boat from Brazil to Europe.
For me, it was going to be a great adventure and an opportunity to gain a lot of experience.
But when police raided the vessel and discovered drugs...
cocaine, hidden under one of the beds.
It can't be!
A key suspect was miles away.
Everything revolved around him.
Who's the boss?
A British guy.
Fox.
Fox.
This is World of Secrets from the BBC World Service. Season 5, Finding Mr. Fox. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.